Welcome to A New Lens with Common Good Capital, where we talk with investors, RIAs, fund managers, and philanthropists about their experiences within different impact investing themes, as well as experience the power of stewardship and capital. I'm your host, Jeff Schaefer, CEO of Common Good Capital, and I'm here today with a dear friend, and I cannot wait to introduce him to you. His name is Ping Liu. He worked at Conbody and Defy Ventures. Ping truly understands the value of work, grace, freedom, and responsibility. Ping, welcome, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Thanks, Jeff.
This is going to be a fascinating discussion for a number of reasons, and so we're going to jump right into it. And you've seen the questions that I'm going to ask you, but I'm actually going to start out and say, Ping, tell everybody your side of the story of when you and I met, and then I want to tell my story of when you and I met.
I think we've met about 4 years ago, maybe?
Something like that.
4 or 5 years ago. Yep. It was actually, before, anything you've just listed, a couple seconds ago.
Yep.
Actually, at the time, I was serving a 15-year prison sentence in California. I was on year 12, I believe, at that point. So at the time I was in prison for a conspiracy to commit a crime, really, like when you're facing 15 years in prison, you start out with just, when it's a decade and a half that you're looking at, you sort of just almost given up, just realize that you're staying with the stigma that, everything tells you that you're not going to get out of it. You're going to spiral, you're going to get released, you're not going to have any opportunities, and you're just going to end back up in prison because that's the only option for you. I was in the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, and yet I was told for a decade and some odd years that, we're going to keep a cell open for you on your release day for when you come back. And, that kind of stuck with me for a good long time. But on year number 12 or 13, I found this nonprofit that basically provides entrepreneurship education to people who are incarcerated. Part of that training is, career readiness, interviewing skills, stuff like that. When I was in there, Jeff, actually, you were a volunteer there. We haven't met, we haven't even spoken. You got partnered with me for our interviewing skills. And you asked me a bunch of questions and really grilled me. And really, you didn't take it easy on me at all. I stumbled and, we kind of moved on to the next exercise and you got partnered with somebody else. And something like 30 minutes later, you came back to me and you're like, hey, Ping, still thinking about this. Maybe you can try answering X, Y, and Z. And I think after that, I don't even remember anything you said to me. Literally, it just felt like I was underwater and everything was muffled. And all I could think was, why is this guy still speaking to me? This incredibly successful guy, some guy, somebody I respect, to us in prison, all the volunteers were like superheroes to us. All I could think about was, why is this guy wasting his time speaking to me? And it took me about a week, 2 weeks after that to really dissect and dig into why I felt that way. And what I started to realize was that all this time in prison, from the way they dehumanized you, assigned you a number the second you walk into the door, the way you're moved around at their will, your prison number is kind of like your SKU number, It's just, to me, I was in Ping Liu. I was inmate 43578. And after so many years of that, you really start to believe it. I didn't realize it myself, but I believed it. I believed that I wasn't worth you speaking to me. I wasn't worth you spending your time on me. And I was a charity case for you to, do your good work that you're assigned to and then move on. So when you came back to me, I just didn't understand why I wouldn't have wasted my time on me. Why would you? But what came out of that is really had to push myself to believe it. I kept telling myself, this guy, this superhero to me, this guy that I respected, thought that I was worth his time. Not that I was just a charity case, but that I was actually worth his time. And he didn't see me as inmate versus civilian or any other way. He just saw me as another human being that maybe he can give some great advice to. That made me realize that I needed to see myself that way too. Not just an inmate, not just a lost cause, but somebody that was worthwhile, that had something to give to the world and had value to bring. And so that kind of set me on this course. And that moment that I've met you, Jeff, and that interaction gave me this momentum that from that day forward, I told myself I was always going to put my best foot forward, put my best effort take every opportunity that comes my way. I was released from prison a year after that. Got my first job with Defy Ventures. Within months, I became head of national program operations, became a board member there, Southern California board member, and just moved on and just took one step at a time. And really, without that interaction with you, Jeff, I mean, without just that 2 seconds that you took to speak to me, it could have gone very differently.
I got to jump in because I want to tell my side of the story, only because you're making it sound like I'm somehow some special guy. And the truth is I had been going into prison since my freshman year in college. And I've always been drawn to inmates. So this is nothing special. In fact, this was just another day for me. I shouldn't make it that plain, but I live in Florida and I'd flown out to come out and see you. But ultimately what I want people to know is a couple things. I didn't do anything special. I just went in and befriended you. I just treated you as I saw you. And then the second thing is just how a simple interaction like that, unbeknownst to me, was a catalyst in your life. And then the third thing I want people to know is look, I have mutually benefited from the relationship that you and I have created. In fact, I think everybody should know, you sent me a LinkedIn after you were released. You explained a little bit you explained a little bit of this to me. I'm not so sure I fully understood the extent of it. Stayed in contact here and there. And then it was about, 3 months ago, 4 months ago.
Something like that, yeah.
All of the light bulbs started to click. And I won't go through it on this podcast, but we have some mutual friends. I was on a webinar. In fact, it's the CEO of Defy Ventures was telling examples of how they're able to help guys like you. He tells your story. His story is talking about me. I'm on the back listening, and I'm like, "Oh my gosh, that's Ping!" So then that's when I reached back out to you, and that's when you actually for the first time I really got your story. We'll figure out how to post the podcast that you did, which is what I ultimately listened to. So this is a big deal for you and I to be having this call today. Absolutely. So
it's like we can't get away from each other.
So let me just tell you a couple things about that interaction. I flew out from Florida to go to, which I didn't realize it was obviously the prison that you were in. And it was a normal day. And, you wait out with all the people to get in, it's normal. And what we were doing that day, and this really impacted me, was we were working with guys like you, obviously, with your resumes. And I don't know if you realize, I mean, it was so shocking to me. I'm sitting in there and I'm like, how does a guy who's been in 20 years of prison or whatever the exact math is, write a resume? I was amazed at how creative the guys were, with how they talked about what they did. On the other hand, what I also noticed was these guys oftentimes didn't have enough job opportunities, enough growth opportunities that they really wanted to have. Yep. I was there about, this must have been a week to 2 weeks, something like that, after I had just been turned down to be CEO of a prison ministry. Now, just for everybody, I mean, I think everybody on this knows I've been in the financial services for 25 years. And when I left my previous career before I started Common Good, there was this window where my name got thrown into the hat to be the CEO of Prison Fellowship. So I had just found out that I didn't get the job. The ironic thing is the day that I was in with you was the day, in theory, if I had been named the CEO, I would have been back in Virginia being announced to the nonprofit or the ministry that I was the CEO. So the amazing part is if I had gotten that job, you and I would not have met.
Yep.
And I remember being in that day, and I remember just thinking, what a gift, even though I didn't get selected, what a gift to be here in this prison with these guys. And then, of course, lo and behold, all this stuff has happened. So, and I told you, Ping, this probably about 3 or 4 months ago, and that's why I appreciate you sharing the story. If my years of going in prison did nothing for anybody, this interaction between you and I has made the last 25, 30 years of the interactions that I've had worth the whole thing. And so just know that you've deeply impacted my life. And for those who are listening, I mean, we've become friends and we will continue to be friends. So, but I wanted to get that out in the open because I want people to know your background, but I also don't want people to focus on that. I want them to hear what you have to say, because you come with some very interesting perspective. And the last thing I'm going to say, and then we'll keep going. You don't remember what I told you, do you?
Maybe not.
Well, when I came back to you, you and I had done these little workshops, and I definitely had grilled you. And I will say, I remember, because I probably worked with, I think, two other guys. You by far were the most engaging. But I remember after you and I had that discussion, that role playing, I just remember being hit with this idea of, oh my gosh, in my career, I've interviewed a ton of people, and I'm not so sure outside of the prison system, and I'm going to be a little bit black and white here, I'm not so sure people understand the value of a job, value of work. And as I was talking with you all, it just hit me like a ton of bricks. So I remember getting excited, come back to you and say, hey, when you go have a job interview, you need to tell people that you understand the value of work. And so that's ultimately what I told you, which is funny. You don't even remember that, but it was
it's starting to click now. But yeah, I think I was just so stuck on like, what are you still doing here? Yeah. You know?
Well, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to interview you. Not so much that you were incarcerated for 13 years, but you come at this with a very unique perspective. So with that, give us a little bit more of your background, and you can leave out the prison stuff or you can add it in. I just want people to get a little more sense of who you are, even apart from your 13 years in prison.
Born and raised in Los Angeles, you know, and to a comfortable middle-class family. What I get a lot when I speak to people, they hear some of my background, they're like, but you don't sound or you don't look like you would have been in prison. And my question always is, well, what does that sound or look like? I went to private schools, private high school, you know, technical high school, at some college, both parents who are entrepreneurs, and statistically not the background you would expect. You know, very comfortable, very much like you, me, or anybody else that's out there. Yeah, I don't think it was very different from very many people. I was very sheltered by the, you know, from prison. I didn't know anybody who's gone to prison. It wasn't a norm that I was around. But I think for me, it really opened up my eyes. I think my views were very narrow. Before I had gone to prison, maybe it's something that I needed to sort of broaden my horizons and to realize that, you know, I think the same with very many people who haven't been in that position or around that community. I always get the conversation that, you know, it's very easy, you know, you just have to do the right thing or just don't break the law. It is. But I've spoken to people who had to make the decision whether to not break the law or feed their children, to have to break the law to feed their children. And when you talk about right or wrong, is it, what's the right thing to do? Do you let your children starve or do you take that risk and sacrifice to keep them alive, to keep their bellies full? You know, to put clothing on their back. That's what I've learned a lot along the way in my journey, that it's not black and white. You can't drop everybody in, you know, these very clear cut buckets. But yeah, I think some college before, you know, going into prison, but I think by all means, very, you know, very normal childhood. I don't think what people would expect when they hear my background, for sure.
So then let me ask you a question so we can understand where you are today. And by the way, for those listening, and I think you briefly mentioned it earlier, you're out there, you've had three or four jobs now, you're number three in this company, you have your own house. Did you buy a house?
I just bought a house, yeah, about 9 months ago, right before, you know, the pandemic and everything got crazy. So,
yeah,
you know.
You know, one of the questions that I used to always ask people is, can people change? Clearly, you are making a difference, not only in your life, but others. So how would you describe who you are today in the context of where you think you are in your journey?
Where I am today? I mean, I think that I'm always in this constant state of discovery of myself. For years, they told me that this is just what I'm going to be. I'm inmate so-and-so. I'll never get out of it. I'll be back on my next term. The prison guard told me on my day coming out that, you know, they'll keep the cell open for me. Or when I come back, I think I'm constantly discovering what I can do and what human potential is. And it's, you know, I think it's sometimes it's sad that we place people into such like a narrow path. You know, you've been in this situation and that's you're not going to get out of it. And unfortunately, that's the way a lot of society is as well. You know, there isn't very many opportunities for people who have a record, or there isn't very many people who are going to give them a chance. You know, I think having a job is one of those big things that really set my life on a certain path. For me, I didn't know what I could do when I got out of prison. I had no experience there. I had barely any work experience, very little education. And by all means, I should have been stuck on a certain path, but I'm always discovering that it's not that way. I think we all have an ability to learn, and with the right attitude and motivation and help, you know, we all need help. And I think I've had plenty of that along the way, but I'm discovering that there really isn't a ceiling to it, right? So from when I was at Defy Ventures, for example, you know, starting out as doing grunt work as an assistant to overseeing national program operations, people reporting their data to me who have their master's degrees and all these other things that I haven't even come close to. It's like, okay, well, if that didn't stop me, what can I do next? And what can I do next? And I think for a long time, preparing to get out, I've tried to plan out every step. Like, okay, if I did this, if I did that, I can do this next and do that next. And what I'm starting to realize is that that's not the way it goes. Not a single one of those steps have actually manifested and worked out that way. And I'm keeping my mind open and looking for the next opportunities and the next chances for growth. But yeah, I think right now I'm discovering who I am and what my potential is. And it's incredibly exciting for me because it's just hope. You know, for so long, like, I didn't have very much hope. You know, I was just hoping to exist at that point. But now it's just really like, well, where will it stop? Will it ever stop? Can I just really continue to grow where I want to grow? And I'm finding that, like, that is actually true, like, given the right opportunities, you know? So I feel like I'm in a good place and very exciting right now.
But one of the things that you clearly illustrate, and I've seen it now in you for a while, obviously, is not only the hope that you have, but the responsibility that you have taken on yourself to get your head in the right place, to take the next right step, and to keep going. And it's so refreshing to hear, despite what you've been through, and yet you still have extreme hope, even in your darkest days, and the responsibility that you take is inspiring for me. So I appreciate that. Saying that, I want to bounce to kind of another idea that obviously you're in the state of, which is awesome, is figuring out who you are, figuring out your skill set, running with it. And so that in of itself, you're making a massive difference in your life. And then of course, your family's life and everybody else you're coming into interaction with. How are you either today or in the future? How are you trying to change the world?
Yeah, definitely. I think for me, it's about changing the narrative. When I was at Conbody, we created a show that we called Prison Hacks, basically just showing the creativity from behind bars. Well, how did we celebrate birthdays, or how people built tattoo motors out of a pen and a CD player and just things like that. And it wasn't for glorifying, you know, the prison life. Right. It was more so like, look how creative these guys are. Look how creative we are. You know, the show was fun. It was funny. It was humorous. For me, it was always about what if, you know, when somebody mentioned the word ex-con or convict, it wasn't like, well, was he a burglar or a robber, whoever. But what if it's like, oh, wow, I heard you guys are creative or resilient or, you know, persistent, or you guys were hard workers, or, you know, you guys are funny. You know, I've watched the show and you guys were funny. And it's really displaying the human side. I'm finding that with everything I've done since getting out, whether it was with Defy Ventures, and maybe I've fallen into it sort of accidentally, it's about breaking down the stereotype, you know? People say that, you know, when you've had a record, you're only going to get so far. You're only going to get certain types of jobs. You know, you only have these chances, you know? And for me, when people say like, no, I can't believe that you've been in prison, you know, why? Why? Because I have a great job and successful, and I've bought a house, or because I speak a certain way, or like, no, like every single one of those people who are behind bars are human beings with very real potential given the right opportunities. And if I can break down people's perspectives in that way and really get them to see beyond the rap sheet, and really see like these guys are brothers, sisters, women, fathers, mothers, maybe then like we'd have this society that will be more open to giving second chances and giving opportunities. And, you know, for me, it's, I've never wanted a handout, right? Even when I've gotten home and my family wanted to help me out, I told them, like, I don't want it. Like, I don't want handouts. I just want the opportunity. Give me a chance to show you what I can do or what I can learn or how I can bring value. You know, I think a lot of people are against, you know, helping ex-cons because it's like, oh, these guys broke the law and now they're looking for a handout. No, I'm not asking for that. I don't want that. You know, I don't think anybody wants that. I just want the opportunity. See us as human beings and give us the same opportunity you would give somebody else and let me show you what I can do. That's it. And so for me, I think the way I want to change the world is breaking down those stereotypes and really seeing that stigma sort of get washed away.
You know, in my experience across the country going in and meeting with typically guys, you mentioned something and I've seen it time and time again. And in fact, I've dreamed about how do we get this out. And it's the creativity and the skills of a lot of those men behind those bars, whether it's writing, whether it's music, whether it's art. I'll never forget, I was in a prison and I can't remember where it was at. The guys had, I think this was in Colorado actually, they had made this huge mascot for a local high school. And I think they were like the Pirates or something. So they built this pirate ship out of scrap metal and all stuff. It was absolutely stunning. And they had it in the prison with them. Eventually they were going to put it in the, they're going to gift it to the high school. You and I need to figure out somehow. I've been dreaming about how do you get these talents, even if these guys are stuck in prison for the next 20 years, 30 years, how do you get some of the wisdom, some of the artistry out of those walls for people to see them? Because I think what they'll do is what you just said. You see that these guys are human. I mean, they have fears. Now, they're not going to show you probably when they're in it, but I've heard it enough. They have fears and they're regretful. And I would love nothing more than in the second half of my career to see a fund, because obviously we're in impact investing, that allows individuals across the United States to invest in either entrepreneurs who are ex-cons, formerly incarcerated, or to businesses that hire ex-cons. Because I think if you can get people actually to put capital, to risk capital for these types of individuals, human beings, I think you'd see the stereotypes break down even more. So you and I've got, we've got a lot to do between the time that we leave this earth, but I'm looking forward to see what all may transpire there. All right. So a couple more questions for you. When did you realize the power of capital?
By the time I was at the age where I really started to notice the power of capital, I mean, I was in prison and at the time, the guys who controlled the gambling pools, the hustles, you know, the guys who sold the food coming out of the kitchen, I mean, they held this power, like they can influence a yard and in some negative ways, right? You know, in some ways they were shot callers. And in other ways, when there were disputes on the yard, like, hey, we wanted to use this workout area, you know, well, we wanted to, and like, you know, some disputes came up there. They really used that sort of power that they wielded to resolve issues as well. I started to notice the guys that had a little bit more clout, you know, had a little bit more say-so were the guys who, you know, controlled the capital that was flowing within the prison, because nobody wants to stop the flow of money, you know, whether it was in prison or anywhere else. I think that was my first real experience with it. But then when I got to Defy Ventures, and I feel like a lot of my story comes back to Defy Ventures, but, you know, when volunteers would come in and frankly speaking, these were people, you know, men, women with means, and as a nonprofit, needed the capital, the funding to operate, but I saw the good that can come from it. And I realized that it wasn't just a sort of a tool for me to live the life that I wanted. It was really, it's a tool for you to shape your environment, your world, you know, to what you'd like to see. If you were somebody that just wanted to use your, you know, your capital for your own personal, for, you know, your own personal gains, you know, that's the world you have there. But he could really use it for the broader good and really change what world we pass on. Whoever the volunteer was that donated the money that gave me that opportunity with Defy Ventures, and you know, here I am today. What if there was a whole army of these volunteers who were giving, you know, this capital, this tool to a number of organizations that are, you know, doing good out there? For me, that's when I started to realize what the power, you know, behind capital really was. Like, it was this tool that you can really create real and positive change.
Man, oh my gosh, you nailed that. I love it. I mean, to go from what you saw in prison to then what you saw coming out of prison. And I don't know if those are two extremes, but clearly you got to see both sides of them and articulate extremely well. I don't know if I said this earlier, but just for transparency, I did go into the prison system with Defy, is when you and I met. So I would agree, it's an amazing program, and I actually know the founder of that quite well. She's quite a lady herself. All right, so I'm going to ask you one other very broad question. You can answer however you want. It's a question that I've wrestled with personally, and it's actually what led me to transition my career into impact investing. In fact, go back to the story when you and I met, I was wrestling with, do I go into prison ministry, or do I go back into the financial services? When the door got shut on the prison fellowship, it was full steam ahead on impact investing. So actually that closed door really cemented me to say, no, let's keep going down this path, which ironically for that at the time, I guess it was 20 years in financial services. There was times I kept going back and forth. Do I stay in this career? Do I go to prison ministry? And yet that door closing made it very clear. And so I've been running this way ever since. But part of the decisions and what drove me to this path is the answers that my wife and I chose for this question. But what does stewardship mean to you?
Oof. It's a big question.
It's a big question. I know.
It's a big question. It's a sense of responsibility. It's using your means, whether you have a lot of capital at your disposal, whether, you know, you're in a position of influence, whatever your resources are, but really using that tool, that responsibility for the greater good.
But Ping, I'm going to be a jerk here for a second. You're not supposed to be saying that. You're a guy who was in prison for 13 years. Yeah. You're supposed to have this hard exterior. Are you just saying this just to say the right thing?
Because it's what you want to hear? Absolutely not. No, you know, honestly, I think you can look at your life and your situations in one of two ways, right? You can really dwell on the negative and how frustrated and how pissed off you are about where you are or where you wanted to be or what you had to go through. Or I look at my prison time as a positive time for me. It was a time of, you know, immense growth, a time for me to mature, to really, you know, I spoke about how I grew up, you know, and I was a little bit sheltered and I didn't really know or see, you know, the other side of life. And, you know, everybody I knew growing up had both parents, you know, were comfortable. And when I was in prison, I had friends who would share stories with me about having to go from one neighbor to the next begging for food because their parents weren't around or they couldn't afford to feed their children. Really like opening my eyes and seeing that side of it and really exploring. I think it did more good for me than not. And I see that I wouldn't be here where I am today had I not gone through that time in prison. And I'm very thankful for it.
I love hearing you talk. And I've told you this before, but there's such a genuineness to what you say. And not to sound funny, but there's just a sweet spirit that you bring to this. And I highly encourage everybody to go hear more of your story. I mean, I don't want to focus on that here, but you'll even be more blown away by Ping's thought process is the decisions that he made while in prison. And I want you to know, Ping, that it's funny. I think about you even in the last, I mean, I think about you a lot, but even in the last couple of days, there's, you know, being an entrepreneur is hard. And there's moments you're like, what am I doing this? And honestly, I think about you and I think about the fact that I'm like, wait a second, here's a guy who was in prison. He has a great attitude and he's making a difference. I'm like, Jeff, get your head out of your keister and keep going. So, I mean, you've got immense value as a person, but your story also is hugely valuable for people to hear. All right, the last question I'm going to end on is, if you could make a dream come true for your life, what would it be?
My biggest thing that I want to make happen is being able to take care of my parents. Mm-hmm. You know, my parents were immigrants and they gave up everything to come to this country. And literally, I know everybody tells this story and it's such a stereotype, but they literally came with nothing in their pockets and built a life for themselves and sacrificed so much. And then, you know, I went to prison when I was 20 for 13 years and they sacrificed and they took care of me then. My mom, she's such a saint. She would visit me every weekend when people wouldn't get visits for a year or 2 years because the system doesn't make it very easy for that to happen. And she, you know, would work all week, drive out to the prison, camp out overnight so she had a good position in line and get in at a decent time to visit me and then go back. And, you know, and just all the sacrifices, you know, my parents had made for me over the years to make sure that I was okay and I was taken care of. My biggest dream right now is to be in a position where I can take care of them and they don't have to worry about themselves in their old age and to know that I would do the same for them. I think for a long time, they've had this worry that they would always have to take care of me and not that was a burden, but that I'm not a parent, but I would imagine as a parent, you want to leave this world knowing that your children will be okay, you know? And I think for a long time, they didn't know if I would be. I didn't know if I would be. And I want to give them that sense of peace that not only that I can take care of myself, but I can take care of them too. Yeah, I think my biggest dream is to give my parents that sense of peace.
Yeah, you answered that differently than a lot, but no, that's dear. And for those of you who don't know the story yet, but I'm going to tell you one thing. Ping's father was in prison at the same time for a period, and your mom would go from one prison to the next, seeing both of you.
At opposite ends of the state, yeah. She would do one on Saturday, the other on Sunday.
Give us a quick update, and how is your family unit doing?
They're doing great. Actually, you know, we're very fortunate enough. I have two sisters, three nieces, you know. For the past 2 weeks, actually, they were able to come out and visit me. I was able to host them in my house.
That's awesome.
We're doing great, very healthy. I think we were that family that grew up that didn't hug each other and tell each other that we loved them. And going through what we went through, we never took that for granted again and really make the most of our time together.
We really appreciate you, your insight, your willingness to be vulnerable and share with us. Ping, it's been a pleasure. And I'm imagining people who listen are going to reach out to me and go, how do I talk to you? So we'll figure that out. But don't forget to subscribe to A New Lens with Common Good Capital on your podcast app of choice. And please rate and review us on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. Hopefully this will help new listeners find the show and hopefully put them on the path to a more fulfilling portfolio within the impact investing space, as well as hearing other wonderful things like you, Ping. So until next time, this is Jeff Schaefer. Have a great day. This podcast is a production of Common Good Capital and does not constitute an offer or a solicitation of an offer. Such offer would only be made through a private placement memorandum. Prospective investors in private placement securities should be aware that making an investment is speculative and involves a high degree of risk, including the risk of losing all or a portion of an investment. Investments of this nature are illiquid and subject to substantial restrictions upon transferability.